Yes, let's give it up for our worship team today. Thank you, you guys. You may be seated. We are so glad that you have joined us today. It's a special day here at Genesis Metro Church. If you're visiting with us today, this is an abnormal service, but today we're taking some time to honor our pastor, my husband, Tim Bourne, for 30 years in ministry. We have a few things to share with you, just where he's been, how it started, how it's going, you know, that thing. And we know that God, we're praying that God does big things today. But I will tell you, as we take, we share some of his highlights of his ministry life, I do want to take a moment to say anything that's all about Tim is his kryptonite. So he is going to be like, you know, trying to figure out what the salty substance is coming out of his eyes. But also he's, you know, anybody gets really uncomfortable when we're just talking about him over and over. So before we start today, we want to, Tim and I, make sure that we say out loud and publicly, this is all for God's glory. Let's give it up for our God. We're grateful to be here and grateful to share with you. We take a few moments to see the ministry life of Tim Bourne.
At Genesis Metro, I think we value people over all everything else. That is our utmost value. It's not about buildings. It's not about programs. It's not about salaries or trying to be the biggest church in town. It's taking people one couple at a time, one single person at a time, and hopefully connecting them to a relationship with God. And then it's just exciting to see life kind of come alive. You know, it's hard to imagine that 4 years ago, Carrie and I moved to Frisco to start a church. And at the time, we had one son, and now we have three. And our family has grown, but also our church has grown. It's great to see that literally thousands of lives have been changed as a result of us moving here, following God's vision. And, you know, it's great to see whenever you've started something from the beginning and see God bless it and literally see your dream come true before your very eyes.
And I think about 2008 when I walked on this property for the first time and shot the first video that allowed us to sit in the building that you're in before we even knew it existed. And on that day, I picked up a rock and God said, that rock is going to be a witness that what I started, I can finish.
When God called me to the ministry when I was 16 years old, I had a dream, and that dream was to reach people who desperately needed Jesus Christ. I was part of several institutions and churches in which I thought that serving Jesus was about giving everything that you had because he gave everything for us. And sadly, what I found was, you know, doing church to them was more of like a social outing. And so I knew there had to be something more, and there was something desperate that was inside of me. And when I was 28 years old, I looked at my wife. We had one child, and we were doing pretty well. But whenever you have something inside of you that's from God, it's almost like something wild. And you know that if you choose to stay where you're at, you're gonna miss out on the greatest adventure that you could have possibly had. So I told her I wanted to go plant a church in Frisco, Texas. She said, where's Frisco, Texas? And I said, I don't know, but I heard it's a good place and there's a lot of young people there and we need to reach the next generation. And so we loaded up everything we had and we moved to Frisco with no budget, with no stability, with no team. And there was just us and one other couple, and we started Genesis Metro out of our house. And here we are, 15 years later, having reached and influenced and touched thousands of lives all over the world. when I think about my calling, I never wanted to have regrets. I think having risked everything and to see all of this and where we're going and every life that's been changed, I have no regrets.
We are on a farm. Ain't no doubt about that smell.
And all I can say is America. I mean, that's what it's all about. I didn't see this being on this trip when we left Saturday, but I mean, miracles do happen. Met my match.
Did you?
Met my match.
This is brutal.
I think I gotta get in there though.
Sweet Jesus.
Do it. Screw it. Get in there. And man up. Get yourself on a hog and do it. Rode a hog.
Yeah!
The smell got me big time. And now we're going to head to the preg check. Life on the farm. If we're gonna come up here and experience the way other people do life, you gotta jump in there.
Oh, thank you so much.
Everybody can have a favorite part of that video. Jordan said his was watching Ben run around in the hog pen behind the camera. He's not the focus. But the white polo shirt's my favorite. Like,
yeah, I
found
feel,
that treasure.
I feel everyone needs to understand something if you're a guest. We go on sermon shoots occasionally, which are adventure trips that we shoot a documentary based around some theme that is going to bring out a practical application of truth. That particular one was unscripted, but we were putting ourselves in the footsteps of a farmer, and ergo, I was the city person in a white polo coming to the farm. So you would never wear a white polo to a farm in which you are going to ride a hog. And so I was in character, and so that's the reason why. So that's the reason why.
If you also have a strong aversion to smells, strong smells.
I do.
In general, like cinnamon.
I do.
Or anything, really.
I can smell things.
You don't like it.
COVID didn't take it.
Wretch. You were retching. Everybody likes that. Is somebody about to throw up? I was like, listen, if I have to hear that noise one more time, I'm going to throw up.
I think
right
we can
now.
Move on straight past that.
Just funny. Good job on the video. That was funny. That was fun. Today, we want to take a few moments to share with you, like I mentioned, a little bit of Tim's last 30 years. And we're going to start at year one. I'm kidding. It's not going to take that long. But we are going to share some things with you because it's important that I think what my big takeaway today is that you're the same person you were when I met you in 94 as you are today, really. And it's been this cool thing to watch. I mentioned last week, Tim wasn't raised in church, and it was like God came into his life at 13 years old and just picked him up and put him on a different path. And since then, when I met him in 94, he was bigger than life, right? Blazing a trail. You can imagine him at 18, 19, 20 years old, just, you know, no filter, there's no self-awareness, just like hard and fast running, like, what are you doing? Let's go. Well, you're doing nothing with your life. We got to move. We're not getting any younger, all these things. Just going, this was him, right, at that age. And so for me, as someone who grew up in church in a very, like, in-the-box household, everybody did their thing that they were supposed to do, and you just did everything right, and then everybody would be happy with you. That was my personality. And then I meet this guy, and he blows the walls off everything. And so in 95, we were dating, and he was hired as a student pastor at a church close to where we were going to college. And it was a small country church. And this place was in Bismarck, Arkansas. Hickory Grove is the name of the church. It was at the intersections, the town was at the intersections of Highway 7 and 84 in the middle of Arkansas. So the town was at an intersection of Highway 7 and 84. It was like 2,000 people at the most. And today, they've grown by one or two. I looked at the population. It was full of, you know what's ironic? There was a lot of hog farms around there. Do you remember that?
Yeah.
Just remember the smell. It doesn't leave you when you think of places, right? So we were at this little church, and they had a really big children's ministry on Wednesday nights called Awana. Anybody ever heard of Awana? And they were all about the elementary kids, which is great, but there wasn't a lot going on for teenagers, and that's why Tim was hired. So at the time, there wasn't one open room to even like have like a meeting with the teenagers on a Wednesday night, like we do Fuse here, which is amazing, by the way, this Fuse student ministry. We didn't have anything like that, not even a room to sit and like sing a song or pray in. So Tim, I remember, starts looking around the town at the intersections of 7 and 84 for a place for us to maybe meet off campus, which was also outside the box for these teenagers. And what he found was this old community center. I went looking for it last year. Do you even know this? I could not find it. I'm pretty sure it's been torn down because it was condemned in 95. So, of course, it's not still there all these years later. But it was like peeling lead paint coming off the windows. Just the oldest bingo hall you can think of. That's what this place looked like. Like, its heyday was in, like, the 30s. Prohibition. Like, that kind. Way back. Just saying. And this is where we were like, great, it's free. We'll meet here. So, Tim, we had, like, a CD player and overhead slides for the worship. Anybody? Like you switch out the slide, you know, you have to like really verse, chorus, like super fast, or we just all be on one. That was our worship. And it was like sad worship. Anyway, all these kids came. Not only that, the church partnered with Tim. They had this evangelistic heart. And so he was basically free to do all this evangelistic stuff that he wanted to do. And so he started busing kids in on school buses from all around because their parents either were still at the hog farm, they were still working, they couldn't get them there. And all these kids start showing up. I mean, like all of a sudden it was like we had about 10 in our church. We had 20, 30, 50, 100. It was so many. And I remember one particular night standing there and watching these kids file in. All poverty level, socioeconomic status. They have nothing in life. But they met Jesus that year. And I fell in love with this man who loved Jesus so much. It was just pouring out onto everyone around him. When I look back, what I see is the seed started of it's all about people. Find a way. That life change happens as a response to God's word. We are better together. The best is yet to come. All the things that God was starting in him, I saw that start to play out at a young age. And today, we're sitting here reaping the benefits of that vision inside of you that you never backed away from it, and we honor you today. He who is faithful in the small things, God will do much and the great things. Can you give it up for Pastor Thank you. Tim?
Thank you. So much to say, so little time. We're going to have several share today because I absolutely hate talking about me. You'll hear very few stories that I share about myself unless it is in relation to something very humorous. It's just not something that's comfortable. But I realize that there are some things that are worth celebrating. You know, I think Prohibition was a little earlier.
Whatever.
Than 19.
I don't know. Way back when, but in the olden days.
Neither
when
here
was
nor
it?
There. Neither here nor there.
Is someone fact-checking me on that? 20s yeah. and 30s.
Well,
20s.
I'm just glad that
Wrong decade.
Prohibition didn't make it. Anyway.
Freedom.
So.
Freedom.
I want to take you down memory lane, and we're going to just share some stories. This first picture is one that I was, the first church that I was in. You'll see Tim in the red shirt. That's me. And you'll see a slight mullet hanging out of the back. And that was the youth group that I started attending and where the church I surrendered to preach at. This is actually the youth choir. Anybody else been a part of a youth choir? Yeah.
Did you have a solo in the youth choir?
I did not.
Oh.
Because I cannot sing. If they had an award for most improved, all my teachers in here, you always give that to the worst one. So we actually toured. We toured some small churches in New Mexico. Yeah, we did. And I dated the little blonde girl down there in the bottom left. Her name is Marnie. Marnie. Her parents took me to church because I needed it. And
they're the ones that picked him up and took him for
years. And they gave me my first Bible, and they still send me birthday cards to this day. Her parents do. And one of my friends actually married her, and he's a pastor. So anyway, neither here nor there. I also dated this other girl. Anyway, it doesn't matter. We'll skip her. Go on to the next photo, why don't we? There's Carrie and I in college. I guess we can back up to my pastor was old school, and I probably have a little bit in that. And my staff would probably tell you that. But old school like this, so like in the olden days, if you were a preacher, like if you say you're called to the ministry, they believe like if you're called, then you preach. And so I did not know that. No one had ever surrendered to preach ministry, anything like that in the few years, 2 years that I had been attending this church. And so I discovered there was even a calling, even though I had a friend that said he was called. And so that led me to like, oh, what's that mean? Oh, well, I know I'm that. And he's like, oh, Tim, take it easy. Because this, my friend, was the straightest arrow that ever was. I was not the straightest arrow that ever was. Got in a lot of trouble, if you will. Like to explore those boundaries of fun. And so anyway, whenever I told my buddy that, like, I think I'm called to ministry as well, he was like, oh. And anyway, so I went and talked to my pastor, and I had just been bringing all these people to church and my friends to Christ, and he was like, okay, well, if you feel like you're truly called, this is the way the Baptists do it, so if you're not a Baptist, you won't understand this. On Sunday morning, you have to walk the aisle, and you have to tell the pastor that you're called to the ministry, and then he announces to the entire church that you're called to the ministry, and therefore, 2 weeks from now, you'll be preaching your first sermon. And I was like, huh? And he said, and I'm not going to help you with it, because if you're truly called, God will give you a word. Did not see either of those coming. And so I did not pass that on to my staff. I help them write, maybe sometimes write, because I'm a control freak. Anyway, so I was born of the fire mentality. So I started preaching when I started the ministry. I was 16, May 12th, 1991. I preached my first sermon May 26th. So this celebration is a couple months late because it didn't work with our calendar, and it's never about the day. It's really about the moment. And so we wanted to celebrate that with you here today. So that took me through my high school and my early college years that I served in churches, the one that she particularly referenced a moment ago. Then I met the love of my life. There she is. And we got married in 1997, March 8th. So 24 years now. This will be 25 coming up.
I know.
What are we doing?
You're so old.
I know. I married Carrie when she was 27. I was 17. And so that's the way that that works. Anyway, so whenever we got married this day, I'll tell you that as a preacher, here's another little thing you need to know. I actually got to talk to a guy this week who was talking about ministry. And, you know, there's your calling. So your calling comes from God. All right. So all of you have a calling on your life. Not everybody does what I'm called to do. We're called to be different parts of the body, and that's what makes it work. Can't have everybody be a preacher. Can't have everybody be a singer. Clearly, I cannot sing. But everybody has a gifting that they're supposed to use within the confines of the local church trying to reach a lost and dying world. So whenever you're a pastor, though, what makes it a little bit different is when you're dating people, the pool of people that you can date, it becomes a little bit smaller. Like if you're a church member, you can date kind of whoever you want. You should date a believer. That's God's recommendation. And, you know, if you don't marry a believer, it causes all kinds of problems. But above that, I had to have a teammate. So imagine being, when I was 16 years old, my pastor's telling me, you know, this is going to be a hard life, this is going to be this, blah, 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 you know, people are going to judge you, blah, 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 all these things. And I'm like, you know, at 16, I'm like, yeah, no problem. I don't care. And so I've never really cared about what people thought about me. And so then when you start thinking about who you're going to date slash marry, you have to have a teammate. And so this person can't be just like someone that you marry and they're like, oh, go do the pastor thing. I have a lot of friends that are in ministry that unfortunately that has been their lot because maybe they surrendered to ministry after they got married. And so the person says, well, I didn't marry a pastor. Fortunately for me, I was already preaching already a pastor when I met her, and she was a pastor's daughter. And I had to look for people not just that went to church. I had to look for people that I am going to give my life. I'm going to say yes to. The pastor gets called at all the odd hours, and they got to go do things, and they got to handle messes that you couldn't even possibly imagine on your worst day. And if my wife, every time, imagine I got a call, or every time something came up, or we were going to go on a search, imagine I had to look at her and like, oh, honey, is it okay if I go? Honey, if so, can this lost person who is on the verge of suicide, can I go? If I had a wife that every time she might say yes, but it was like begrudgingly, I couldn't do what I do. If I tried to plant a church, imagine going through that situation. Let's go to the next photo. I think we'll be getting there. Oh, that's another. Well, I'm not going to tell that story this service. We ran long last service. That's the first church I pastored.
Keep going.
Oldest Baptist church in Texas. Anyway, go. Keep going. Keep going. Keep going.
There
we go. So I just fast-forwarded 10 years, okay? When we moved here, that's little baby Jordan, by the way. He always feels left out because I say that it was a team of four. He really held down the children's ministry at that time. He was our only baby. And so anyway, we moved here. If I didn't have a teammate that was willing to risk everything, then just being a career pastor, a professional, I was already a senior pastor when I was 25. Like, I'd just ride that out, you know, just keep on, grow that church or move to a bigger church. And that's kind of the way most pastors do it. But I had to have a teammate that was willing to lose everything. Because in order to start Genesis Metro and the church that I hope that you guys enjoy with the craziness of showing videos that we show sometimes, and do the things that we do. We wanted to have a unique church that was authentic, that people walked in and go, those pastors are real people, they talk about real things, and that God can make a difference in our lives. But in order to do that, we had to say no to money. So we could have moved here with full funding, the ability to buy houses, and the ability to just sit around and dream up sermon series and try to find a place to meet if we just stayed inside the brand that we were a part of. But we believed that that brand was steeped in legalism, and by and large, they didn't love people. Ergo, would you want comfort for your family, or would you want to reach people that traditionally maybe haven't been a part of churches? Well, we chose the latter, and the reason why I could do that is based upon who I chose. All the young people in here, I want you to know, it is so critical that you find someone who is equally yoked, and that's the preacher way of saying, that is a believer that is passionate about following after the dream that God has put inside of you. Because it's going to take a team if you want to reach the highest heights. And you have to be aligned on the biggest things. The little stuff about whether the cup's upside down or toilet paper's over or under, all that stuff, that none of that ultimately is going to decide your fate. But when you're not aligned on your values, that God is first and God's word rules and church is going to be a non-negotiable in our lives, when you're not aligned on that stuff, it creates some really messy moments. And so I really want to encourage all the young people, don't marry someone that you believe is a fixer-upper because they are what you marry. And if you get any better than that, that's grace. But just because you can live jumping off a cliff with a gimp leg for the rest of your life doesn't mean you should. Okay. That was some marriage facts that I just dropped on people. All right. Do we have any other pictures?
Yes. I think.
What's next?
I don't know.
Oh, this is a great one. First baptism at Genesis Metro. I worked at a shipping company, like a UPS type store when we moved here for a little bit. I also waited tables, maybe bartended a little bit. Who cares? So that guy was an atheist, and he was on leave from the Navy. And I love atheists, by the way. If you know any atheists and you would like to have them talk with me, I would love to do that. I think atheists generally love me because I don't give you an answer that just says, oh, believe it because I say it. I believe that we can have a reasonable discourse and that at the end of that discourse, you will come to one conclusion that design necessitates a designer and that there can't be complexity without design, and that complexity is so complex that at some juncture, when you go back far enough in time, something had to be a source. And there's not disagreement with atheists about whether there was a source, because we know that everything emanates from something. It's just a matter of who created that source. And I think that a reasonable person would come to the same conclusion under the evidence that that's God. And so he accepted Christ, and it was sleeting outside. And we had to get this baptism in because he was getting ready to redeploy. And so we found a hot tub at an apartment complex. And that is the first baptism of Genesis Metro. Isn't that great? Love that story. Now I have a couple things to clear up real quick. Next photo. This shot right here. I don't know if you saw that. We took this chair. I don't even know where we got the chair.
Red leather chair in a forest.
Yeah, red leather chair in a forest.
Great video shoot.
And there's a, at the time, I just want to underscore, this was amazing, all right? I just want you to know that. Like, back in the day when we shot this, no one else does this. No one else shoots these videos. And so this was amazing. The most popular movie series at the time was The Matrix. And I don't know if you remember when Morpheus was sitting with Neo and he was like, red pill, yellow pill. That's the look we were going for, okay? I don't know cinematically that we achieved it, but that was what we were going for. And then the other one where you saw me walking through the field on El Dorado.
With the affliction shirt on.
With the affliction shirt. This was a scene out of Gladiator. Do you remember when he was in the Elysium fields and he was like doing that? We were like, yeah, let's do that. Living the dream. We'll make this video. And so we paid people to shoot this video, and so it was, it's sad. At the time, again, it was amazing, so you better respect.
It was funny to think that there was a this girl here in first service, Raquel Russell, who's been here forever. I remember that you said, hey, get the shot, watch this, what, I'm going to stick out my hand on the grain, make sure you get the shot. And she was like, what? She tried to talk you out of it.
Yeah, we didn't, though.
No, you did it. You captured it.
And that was the day that I picked up our family rock, which these are the same rocks from the same field. For those of you that are new, we're going to be giving you an opportunity in the next couple of months to go get your rock. There's still quite a few of them out there. And that's when God like really confirmed that promise. That was before we owned the land, before we had a chance to own the land, before we were in this building. And so God has been faithful to do exactly what he says he's going to do. And so without further ado, I think, do you have anything else? All right, we're going to bring my two oldest sons up, and they're going to share the 30 years from their perspective. So come on up, guys. Love you. He said I wasn't a hugger in the first service.
I did. First service.
We didn't even hug that time.
Oh, switch.
I love you, Mom.
The first service, we just patted. It was like a... Yeah, yeah. Man, we're here, though.
Yeah,
here.
Hey, it's great to be with you guys this morning. Thank you for the leadership for giving us an opportunity to kind of share where our hearts and minds were at throughout all of this.
Everywhere.
When we were getting together to plan what we were going to talk about, I was just thinking about a couple weeks ago when Pastor Tim had everybody raise their hands if they arrived at this church for the first time post-pandemic, and it was, I think, over 50% of the room. You know, you guys know us as we are today, but as you saw in those pictures, we were also children in this church and youth, teenagers in our youth group.
Definitely. We grew up here. We grew up, with, the Bourne family. And so this is who we are now.
We have a slideshow of our own. We're going to walk through some pictures.
We're not going to fast forward at all.
Everybody likes
we're
going to
go through each one. Here's the first one.
Where are we at right here?
We are at Pink Elementary School, right down the road, down El Dorado. We were at Bowles for a little bit, then went to Pink, and then here, and then hopefully to the new one. But this is a fall fest kind of thing. You know, you dress up, you hang out with your family, like a reach out event at Pink, and that was who we were. Just two kids with two pastor parents.
I think Mom has the oldest to date GM t-shirt on with a little airplane up there. You can see it.
Yeah.
That is a throwback. Nice. Yeah, so we were kids, like many of you, I'm sure, have children in the back, and, you know, went on to become our totally super cool teenage selves.
Oh, the best. Here we go. Here we go. Oh, gosh.
I had to talk him into putting these on the screen.
He did. I did not want to put mine. I was like, dude, I don't know. Like, these people don't know us, bro. Like,
we thought we were the stuff. My hair is actually naturally curly when it's long, so I had someone straighten it for me for this picture.
For this specific picture. Oh, he'd come home and it was just like,
that's bad. Bieber.
I was, dude, and then there was me. I am in a H&M fitting dressing room kind of thing, and I actually didn't buy these clothes. Put them on for the picture, and then that was it. You know, went home in my shorts and white t-shirt underneath.
We had the swag, for sure.
We had the swag. Oh, yeah. Swag.
That was the word back then.
Yeah, do you want to tell them about...
Quick aside, I looked it up. Prohibition, 1920 to 33. So you were right in there. 30s, that counts.
One for Carrie Bourne, zero for Tim. All right, so here we are. These are our middle school pictures. You know, we grew up, obviously, like you said, through the whole thing, and then we are now here where we are today. You know, and I think the journey is always the best part, right? It's crazy to see, and we're still young, but, I mean, it's been insane to see the growth, the overall change of our church and how we are now. And, like, I think we had a picture of me. You know, I had the opportunity now to preach on Wednesdays.
Killing it, by the way. Just killing it.
Thank you. I am like my dad as well. I don't know how to do that. But Wednesdays and Sundays, I've gotten the opportunity to speak and to think, like, that middle school kid in the dressing room at H&M never thought he'd be, you know, speaking on a stage. Like, speech class all throughout middle school was just a disaster. It was a nightmare. And to think that I would be here right now is crazy. It's crazy to think about. But then you also think about the flip side, Jordan, who now leads worship on Sundays and Wednesdays. Give it up. Just killing it. Absolutely. Like, me and him growing up, I guarantee, and we have a lot of stories we could share, we did not always live that. We didn't always live like that. But it's so cool to see how God can work. And it's all because of the leadership of fatherhood and of being our parent first rather than our friend. And so the craziest, I think, picture we have is this one.
It's our men's retreat.
This year is the uprising this year. And I mean, I get choked up a little bit because it is, for the first time, I think, captured the fruit of the fatherhood that he has come to give us. Yeah. And for us to be able to experience that with him, you know, and to see, you know, what it can be, what ministry can be, is surreal. It was a surreal moment for me, for sure.
Yeah, I mean, just to have the opportunity to lead together is something that's super special. And I think part of what makes that so dear to my heart is just knowing, you know, the backstory, all the nights that led up to that night. It wasn't always, you know, mountaintop, picture-perfect moments in the Bourne household, but, you know, surprise, there was conflict. There were times where we had hard conversations. There were times where we found mischief, as teenagers do.
Found mischief.
And grounding was a popular tool of our parents, and so phones would go away, video games, social outings, whatnot. Like, there was really one time.
One specific.
That kind of stands out among the rest.
You got to think like this. Like, when we were thinking about talking, you know, sharing a story, you know, like, what would capture, you know, the Tim Bourne parenthood? You know, we could share a lot, because, again, we did find a lot of mischief. I love that you said that.
Well, you saw the creativity that goes into, like, the sermon series and things like that, and we had a whole ship built out here for a month just recently, and that applies in the home. That doesn't end here. So
we have one story.
Yeah.
One story that sticks out more than the others, and it was a time, probably in our high school days, we were 2 years apart, so it's somewhere in there, but we got in trouble for two separate things, but at the same time.
We synced up.
We synced up in our finding of mischief. But what happened is we both get in trouble, and I think parents would see that as like, oh my goodness, both my kids are getting in trouble at the same time. Our family's falling apart. We need to move. We need to go on vacation. We got to do something. You know, but
wasn't
not
that bad.
Not dad. Dad saw it as an opportunity to capitalize on the mischief that was found for both of us.
Not only were we both grounded, but we were both grounded
together.
Same grounding.
Same. So he joined. He put them together.
We lost our beds.
We were grounded together. We lost our beds.
Grounded from our beds.
So like, you know, the phone's gone, the video games, going out with friends, all that, but then the bed's gone. And that's when, you know, stuff went real. You know
so
what I'm saying?
We shared stuff our plot under the pool table.
Yes.
Which isn't very wide.
If you have a pool table,
we cuddled and
around a pool
played
table,
cards.
You know how big that is.
That was where we'd sleep. It was a 6 month grounding were the terms. And so
carpet
we had,
bed.
Yeah. We had a whiteboard downstairs that had the tally. We started at 180.
180.
And every sunrise, and then you go down, you get to, it's like counting down to Christmas, take a day off.
Yeah.
And what ended up happening is that we were rewarded or punished on our behavior with days subtracted or added to that number on the whiteboard. So, you know, talking back or whatever,
no,
you could get days added back on.
It was no grace either. It was, as soon as you did something, it was
add
a day.
Boom.
Add 5 days. 10.
And take it a step further, we kind of started getting, like, rented out as labor to church members. Like,
oh, it wasn't a secret.
Do you need a couch
this
moved?
This is a public knowledge thing.
Do you need your lawn mowed? You know, my boys want to earn some days off their grounding.
Yeah,
they'll
like,
come out.
After announcements, you know, they announce all the different events. So it was like, also, an aside, my boys still have about 100 days left. So you need anything done.
Yeah.
More than, for free. Days became the currency.
Hard-earned days.
For us.
Yeah.
That was it. We weren't focused on money at all.
So creativity.
It was like so many things. Like, we learned more about anything else. But I thought that was a normal thing. So I thought, like, every parent, like, yeah, everybody had their days.
It's what you know.
Everybody get their beds taken away. And so.
Show of hands, anybody in here ever had their bed grounded from them? No.
I would tell my buddies, like, hey, I can't hang out tonight. Whatever, I got grounded, you know, I'm sleeping on the carpet, you know, it's fine. And.
She got my pillow down here.
They'd look at me, you know, and they'd be like, are you okay? Do we need to call CPS? Like, are you safe? And I'd be like, yeah. I'm like, okay. This isn't normal. But you look at it, not just how it translated into the creative punishments, and there's been many more, but also into our other side of family life, which is, you know, family vacations and the creativity of what he did with those, and even like family Olympics on Christmas Day. Like, that's something that he dreams up and has these games planned, and like we all participate, and like it makes these amazing, amazing memories. And so, like, it goes both ways. You know, I think over the years, what I've seen is that my dad, what he's passionate about, right, is where all his energy goes to. His creativity, his innovation, it just flows out of him. He can't control it. It's like you said, it's wild. And so you think about the church and all the crazy things that we pull off, and the uprisings and the sisterhoods and the axe cutting of different, like, it's just, you can't ever accuse him of not caring. That can't be something that you can back up with evidence, you know, because you can't have that much passion, that much leadership, that much care, that much creativity without something that is on fire for God, without a man who has led fearlessly through all the years of trials and triumphs, and to see where we are today, where we're going. I mean, it's an amazing thing to be a part of.
For sure. I mean, one thing I've learned is that sometimes you have to go through the muck in order to get to the mountaintop. And so just being able to go through that as a family, you know, there are hard days, but there are days like today when we get to celebrate all that God's done over the course of your life.
Right.
And when I look back where we were at Pink Elementary School, all the blood, sweat, and tears that had to go into just taking this plumbing warehouse and renovating it into a church building so that we could all be sitting here today, and what's going to happen in order to get to El Dorado, you'll just never know all the behind the scenes of everything that's been put into this to make this happen so that your family could have a chance to experience God, experience life change. And I'm just so grateful to be part
of
it.
Definitely.
Dad, we love you.
Thank you.
Give
some praise. Next up.
Up next.
Up next, here we go. Put your hands together for Tim Salazar.
Good morning. How are y'all? My name's Tim Salazar. Most people call me T-Sal, and I'm the interim executive pastor here at Genesis Metro Church. I just want to thank the pastors and the staff for allowing me to be a part of this celebration. And don't you just love this family? And this is amazing church that they built, 30 years of ministry. It's unbelievable. My beautiful wife, Kristen, and I have been a part of this church for about half of the time that Tim's have been in ministry. And our three beautiful children have literally grown up here. And we call it a blessing that they have. I get to tell you, I get this honor and privilege to tell you about my friend and my pastor, Tim Bourne. You know, he's a great friend. And, you know, we've been through some highs, we've been through some lows. But I can tell you, my first call in the darkest moments of my life are to him. And he's always been there for me. And, you know, I'm not the only person in this room that can say that. He's an awesome friend. And he has this incredible capacity to love. And he truly lives out it's all about people in his life. But not only that, he's an incredible leader. He has always been steadfast and unwavering in the calling that God has put on his life. And he will strive for more always. And he's going to push us. He's going to push us. He'll push us. He's pushed me. He's find a way, T-Sal, find a way, Ben, find a way, Hollis, find a way, church, find a way. You know, that's not unusual from this stage, right? We're going to find a way. He has a unique ability to push people and to push them towards calling, the calling of God. And what's awesome about that is that there's been 30 years of that. None of this has changed from the beginning. So there's this incredible legacy of leadership that has been left through the ministry of Pastor Tim. So I can tell you about a little bit about me. I'm a cautious person, and I'm someone who needs a push. And I would never be able to realize my calling without it. But, you know, caution is the enemy of calling. So for me, I needed a person like this in my life to push me towards what God had for me. And it's been an amazing ride, you know, and I can tell you since the very beginning, it's been the same. When we walked into this church so many years ago, it was actually Pink Elementary, we found a loving community where everyone invited us to stuff, and we, you know, they knew our names, and, you know, it was just awesome, and they accepted us even though we weren't churchgoers. We didn't really know what this is about, and I got so many opportunities, and one of those opportunities I was able to lead at a retreat. It was the first time I ever led, very first retreat. The very first event that we did was called a firewalk. And those of you who know what a firewalk is, it's walking across hot coals. And, you know, our church is amazing. We do incredible things, and we execute at a high level. But, you know, I just didn't think we could execute a firewalk. You know, in my head, I'm like, this is dangerous. I'm going to get burnt. You know, and I was nervous. But we teach our leaders to always step to the front of the line and say, I'll do it. If no one else will do it, I will. I want to be an example for my team. So I did it. I went to the front of the line, but, you know, you could see on my face that I didn't want to do it, you know. So I looked across the coals, and I saw Tim. He's like, you can do it. You know, just take it slow. It's all going to work out. And, you know, it worked out. And honestly, that's been a theme. I could tell you hundreds of stories where there's been some crazy stuff, and I thought about, you know, maybe not doing it, but, you know, everything worked out. But, you know, our church is going to be on this incredible adventure. We're going to continue to move towards where God wants us. And our pastor is going to lead us there, and he's going to continue to push us there. And it's going to be amazing. But I can tell you, there's an amazing adventure ahead, and there's going to be some crazy situations. But Pastor Tim, where he's leading us, when God is sending us there, it's all going to work out. So I have a lot of stories, like a lot of them. But there's only so many I can tell on this stage on a Sunday. But I thought of one in particular. We had gone to Mexico on a sermon shoot. You know, Pastor Tim was talking about the sermon shoots. And in this instance, we had camera equipment that went to Mexico City, and we had gone to Morelia, which was about 4 hours away. So me and another guy, we volunteered to drive to Mexico City and bring it back. Oh, by the way, Morelia is cartel country, and we were going to drive in the middle of the night. But, you know, I'll let you see this video.
Mexico City awaits.
Oh. Don't die. Come back to me.
So people were concerned. My wife was concerned. You know, but honestly, I wasn't concerned because I knew it was all going to work out. So we went to Mexico City, got what we needed, started heading back. In the middle of the trip, in the middle of the night, all of a sudden, we heard, That's not good. So we stopped the car, got out, we looked around, and we saw a giant metal bar stuck in the back of the car, like literally shoved in there. And I couldn't believe what I was seeing. We actually ran over that. So I looked around the car, and I'm thinking all these terrible things that could possibly have happened, and we'd be stuck in the middle of nowhere in Mexico. But the car was fine, miraculously. So you know what? I just got the end of that metal bar, and I pulled it out, and we just jumped in, and we headed back. You know, everything worked out.
Oh, shoot.
Amigos! Oh, God.
Oh. We made it! So there's adventure awaits, my friends. You know, it's going to be an awesome, awesome time. We're headed towards El Dorado. We're headed towards some amazing things as a church. And our pastor's going to push us. And we need that push. You know, personally, I'd rather have a smooth road. But sometimes you're going to run into some crazy situations. But I can tell you, it is always going to work out with this man leading. So I just want to thank you for 30 years of ministry. Thank you for the opportunities you've given me. And cheers. Here's to another great 30 years. And with that, I'd like to introduce my friend, Pastor Jesse Kilbane.
Hello. I'm going to do things a little bit differently. I'm actually going to read you mine because I have a lot to say, and I want to make sure I get everything in there. My name is Jesse Kilbane, and I am one of the student pastors here at Genesis Metro Church. I'm also a close family friend of the Bournes, so much so that my own sister, my own flesh and blood, was like, wait, what's your last name again? Kilbourne? And I was like, it's Kilbane, but it's one of the same. But I want to start by telling you some of the things that our pastor is good at. But before I get into that, I wanted to start with what he is not good at. And I thought of one thing in particular, and that is he is not good at having a gallbladder, right? So he actually got his taken out, but it's a big running joke. But seriously, he does excel in a lot of things like playing spades, a cornhole, volleyball, fishing, smelling a cinnamon candle from a mile away, and buttering every single square of his waffle. But more so than just that, he's really good at winning people over for Jesus. He has made it his mission to invest in people so that they can experience the same life change that captured his heart. At the end of April 2017, I got a text message. And if you know PT at all, his text messages are short and sweet and sometimes really hard to understand as he uses voice to text often. And you have to read it like out loud, like you're playing the game of Mad Lib, and add all the context clues that your mind can possibly think of in order to realize what he had meant to say. But this one, it wasn't like that. This line was clear. And it says, do you have time to meet? And I wanted to ask all of the questions, but I just replied, where and when? I'll be there. Soon enough, I found myself at the church sitting across the room from Tim with his ankle on his knee and his arms stretched across either side of the couch as he prepared me for the ask. He told me that ministry was hard and that people are messy. And that it wasn't just a 9-to-5. And honestly, he gave me so many other ministry moments that I didn't take advantage of because all I was thinking about in my head was how not to say yes and sound too giddy about it. About a week had passed and I was over at the Bournes and Tim took another opportunity to cast the vision. He said, I need you to be Jesse Awesome Galata. In my own sense of just being naive and with the strong-willed and determined personality that I have, I was motivated to rise to the occasion, to prove him right, and to be all that I needed to be for Genesis Metro Church. But looking on it all now, I can see the risk. I was a 23-year-old recent business school graduate with no previous ministry experience on paper. And where other churches had previously discarded my resume without a second look, Tim Bourne saw me, not for my age or my inexperience, but my value and my character. And he measured me by my greatest moments. Tim Bourne bets on the goodness of people. And I've watched him extend more grace and more mercy than anyone I've ever met. And I've watched him hand out second chances without hesitation as he looks at someone's future instead of their past. And I've watched him give opportunity after opportunity for people to step out of their comfort zone and be empowered to lead. He is never selfish with his ministry and is not paralyzed by the what ifs. And he understands that there can be pain associated with growth, but people are worth it. That there is not an opportunity that I have been given that he didn't check on me and help assist with whatever I needed. Because hear me, though he is direct, he also seeks to support and to encourage and has never left me to just simply figure it out on my own. Tim guides, leads, and coaches. There hasn't been a spoken word that I've written for Christmas that he didn't look over for me. And there isn't one sermon that I've written that he didn't offer his collaboration. And there hasn't been one problem that he asked me to face on my own. He has helped me to do what I haven't always wanted to do and to be who I've always been meant to be. I have found that easy doesn't change you. Thank you, Tim, for taking a chance on me and for sacrificing your time to grow me as a pastor and also as a person. And I am grateful to live in the overflow of your obedience. And just like Pastor Tim preached for his Keep Casting series, the image and the quote of Jack Nicholson in my head will never be the same. You can't handle the overflow. I don't deserve it. And I can't handle it. But I am so thankful for it. Because Tim, I know that people have abandoned you. And I know people have betrayed you. And they have made promises that my cynical heart does not know if they ever had any intention of keeping. And there aren't many people who stayed to fight with you. But that has not jaded you or hardened your heart. And there are times that I reflect on the things that you have been through. And the people that have turned their backs, and I honestly don't know how one person can bear the mourning of broken friendships and the discouragement over interruptions in the plan and heartbreak over the rumors. But despite it all, you've been confident that God will always restore what's been stolen. And that no matter what comes, it's just about Jesus. And that will always be enough. I have been refreshed in my faith because I look to a leader who lets Jesus be enough. And I am a better person today just by being around you. Because you have never withheld the blessing that came to you. But instead, you passed it through yourself and into others. You faithed it so we could make it. You faithed it for the next family, for the next future, and for others to have freedom. You faithed it when you left Arkansas with only a vision, a wife, and a baby, and decided to walk out God's plan for your life. You faithed it when you gave the first $100,000 of our first capital campaign to an orphanage in Honduras because you knew God would bless that obedience. You faithed it when COVID wanted to take Christmas. And you asked all the people to wait and to pray and to watch together online until December 24th. You faithed it for us, even on the harder, darker days. You picked up grown men off the floor as they were weeping from a relationship gone south. You have talked people out of taking their own lives. And you have spoken words of hope and truth at funerals where parents had to bury their children. And it's for these reasons and so many more that you have never seemed like a boss, because a boss has a title, but a leader has the people. And you've had one eye on the fight and one eye on your friends. And that's what it means to be all about people. So today we honor you for the lessons that you've taught us, but also the ones that you have personified. Your DNA has been to point only to Jesus and to prioritize the kingdom above everything else, like your life verse says, Matthew 6:33. but seek first the kingdom of God and his righteousness, and all these things will be added to you. Tim Bourne has loved us so extraordinarily and so graciously that there aren't enough words or enough time for me to explain it. But I trust that if you stay around long enough, you will see that the motivation behind his vision is his love for the lost. Will you please join me in welcoming to the stage and giving honor to our pastor, Tim Bourne.
All right, enough of that. Thank you so much. Thank you so much. I receive it, although it is very difficult for me to receive. Giving, easy for me to do. Receiving, hard. I had a little bit I was going to prepare to speak, but I think you guys have gotten enough today, and we're a little bit over time. But I do want to share with you a couple things for making 30, what that looks like. And I hope that you can relate it to anything in your own life. Do you want to make it 30 years in marriage? You want to make it 30 years in your career life, doing great things and maintaining your passion? How does one do that? The Apostle Paul said this. He does all this for the sake of the gospel. Put my verse up. I do all this for the sake of the gospel that I may share in its blessings, and we'll end on the next verse. Run in such a way as to get the prize. The Apostle Paul was comparing that people in the worldly system, outside of God's economy, that they run in such a way to win a corruptible prize, one that's temporal, one that's passing away. But the Apostle Paul said, we do not run in that race. We run in a greater race, that a race that is for the glory of eternity, that God may be honored, that he may be raised up, lifted in our lives by what we do. And the only way that we can bring him glory is to do his will. And his will is to reach a lost and dying world. There is nothing greater than reaching a lost soul for Jesus Christ. There's nothing. There's no amount of Bible knowledge you will ever have that will compare to winning a lost soul for Jesus. Information does not change eternity. We want you to know more about the Bible. But I don't want you to believe that knowing more about the Bible is a substitute for your life being used to reach others with the gospel of Jesus Christ. As a matter of fact, knowing more about the Bible should lead you to be more passionate about reaching people. So I'll give you a couple of things that have guided my life in the last 30 years. Number one, I'm always going to tell you the truth. I'm always going to tell you the truth. I'm not going to sugarcoat it. I'm going to tell you the truth. Even the truth that you don't want to hear. Most importantly, the truth that you don't want to hear. If your marriage is on the rocks and you come and you sit in my office and you say, Tim, how do we do this? I'm not going to say, oh, well, just keep doing what you've been doing. It's worked out great so far. I'm not going to say that. I'm not going to be mean. I'm not going to say you're an idiot unless it's a guy. Then I might on the side say quit being an idiot. But I'm going to say this is what you're going to have to do, and it's not going to be easy. It's going to be hard, because if it was easy, you would have already figured it out and you would have already done it. When it comes to preaching, I could get up here every week and I could just say love God and just like it'll all work out. But unfortunately, in the Bible, for most of the people that love God, it didn't work out. I'm going to tell you the truth. I'm going to push you just like I pushed T-Sal. Only because one day I'll give an account of every word, every sermon, every way that I led Genesis Metro Church and all the other churches that I ever pastored. And you won't be my judge. God will be my judge. So how do I lead in such a way? I lead like I don't care what anyone else thinks if I'm doing what God tells me to do. Now, it doesn't give you a license to just do dumb things. is that you have to know that one day you'll give an account. So why do I want to preach and lead the way that I do? And why do I want to push you? Because I don't want you to stand before God one day and give your account, which we all will, and you say, well, I didn't know. The guy that led me, he never told me that I need to serve, that I need to sacrifice, that I need to put my money where my mouth is when it comes to ministry. He didn't say it. Wouldn't it be terrible if your pastor didn't tell you the truth? Yeah. So that's what I'm going to do. That's what I've done for the last 30 years, is tried to always tell people the truth. And then with passion, all the passion that I have in my being, share God's word with you in the most creative, sometimes fun, sometimes in many other churches, borderline inappropriate. But we're trying to reach a different group of people. And if that style is not for you, I have some great churches I would recommend that are in the area that probably wouldn't live on that edge as much as we do. And it would not hurt my feelings. I just want you to be in a church where you can serve God and give all that you have. But at Genesis Metro, the vision doesn't change. We'll do something else crazy, and we'll bring it to life. And you'll come in here, and people will walk in and go, that's amazing. That you guys dropped that guy off a cliff, and he passed out. That is amazing. It's amazing. You swam in a crocodile pond. That's amazing. You risk your life. Some people are like, that's stupid. I would never do that. Well, guess what? I'm not you. You wouldn't have planted this church either. So, okay, anyway, I'm not going to indulge this too much. But I just want to say that where we're going is the best pages have yet to be written. And you have walked in, if this is your first several months at our church, you've walked in at a great time. But know this, we need you. We need you. You need to be the one 5 years from now standing on some stage or in a living room leading a life group, sharing what God's did in your life. That's what you need to do. You need to take what God has given you and you need to reciprocate it to the kingdom. If you wouldn't be here unless somebody else sacrificed, then shouldn't you want to sacrifice so that someone else could be here? That's the DNA of Genesis Metro Church. That's what it has been. That's what it always will be. And I hope you'll let us indulge in these creative fantasies that we bring to life. And I hope that you would see that that truth that's inside there is oftentimes what sticks with people the most. Jesus did it through telling stories about farms. We do it through telling stories about farms in a much different way. But nonetheless, it is indelible. And so with that in mind, I want to thank you guys for celebrating this past 30 years. And we're going to have a time of worship, which would be apropos. Would you guys let me pray for you before we do so? Father, we ask in the name of Jesus that you would take this testimony and God, that you would use it as a seed that would be planted in other people's lives, that they would be able to say, you know what, I didn't get to have the benefit of being raised in a Christian home, but I can make a Christian home. I didn't know anything about the Bible when I walked into church, but if I stick around long enough, I can learn enough that when I go out and find thirsty people, I can show them where the well is. I've messed up a couple of times in my life, and I've broken things and maybe gone through some divorces and affairs and addictions, and you could be tempted to say in any other church that maybe you're not qualified. I think that if you read the Bible, you'll find that it's not the qualified that he called. It's the willing. The person whose heart is focused towards God. Whatever's happened in the past, that's the past. We live for right now. God has given you right now. Can't we get it right now? If you start getting it right now, you'll have 5 years, 10 years, 20 years that you look back and say, that was the moment that I decided to get it right, do it right. You'll still make mistakes, but you will fail forward. And I promise you, the day that you say yes to Jesus, and not like with caveats, not with carve-outs, but you say yes with all your heart, I promise you, he'll challenge you. He'll take you down roads that you never thought possible. And inside of those dreams, there will be pain in the growth process. He'll reveal some areas of your life that you've been more selfish than you could possibly imagine. And you've got to let go of that in order to embrace him. But I promise you, on the other side of that embrace, if you could see what I see standing on this stage, knowing many, many of the stories that are sitting in the audience, there is nothing that I have missed out on or let go of that is in comparison of any value compared to your life that has been changed by the gospel of Jesus Christ. So I invite you, run the race so that you can win the crown that lasts forever. Would you stand? There's going to be a victory.